Starless Night, Chapter 3, Ben Ray's Bluff. The mercenary silently approached the western end of the Ben Ray compound, creeping from shadow to shadow to get near the silvery spiderweb fence that surrounded the place. Like any who came near House Ben Ray, which encompassed 20 huge and hollowed stalagmites and 30 adorned stalactites, Jarlaxle found himself impressed once more. By Underdark standards, where space was at a premium, the place was huge, nearly half a mile long and half that wide. Everything about the structures of House Ben Ray was marvelous. Not a detail had been overlooked in the craftsmanship. Slaves worked continually to carve new designs into those few areas that had not yet been detailed. The magical touches, supplied mostly by Grumph, Matron Ben Ray's elder boy and the archmage of Mensa Boronson, were no less spectacular, right down to the predominant purple and blue fairy fire hues, highlighting just the right areas of the mounds for the most awe-inspiring effect. The compound's 20-foot-high fence, which seemed so tiny anchoring the gigantic stalagmite mounds, was among the most wonderful creations in all of Mensa Boronson. Some said that it was a gift from Loth, though none in the city, except perhaps ancient Matron Ben Ray, had been around long enough to witness its construction. The barrier was formed of iron strong strands, thick as a drow's arm, and enchanted to grasp and stubbornly cling stronger than any spider's web. Even the sharpest of drow weapons, arguably the finest edged weapons in all of Toril, could not nick the strands of Ben Ray's fence, and, once caught, no monster of any strength, not even a giant or a dragon, could hope to break free. Normally, visitors to House Ben Ray would have sought one of the symmetrical gates spaced about the compound. There, a watchman could have spoken the day's command and the strands of the fence would have spiraled outward, opening a hole. Jarlaxle was no normal visitor, though, and Matron Ben Ray had instructed him to keep his comings and goings private. He waited in the shadows, perfectly hidden as several foot soldiers ambled by on their patrol. They were not overly alert, Jarlaxle noted, and why should they be, with the forces of Ben Ray behind them? House Ben Ray held at least 2,500 capable and fabulously armed soldiers, and boasted 16 high priestesses. No other house in the city, no five houses combined, could muster such a force. The mercenary glanced over to the Pillar of Narbondel to discern how much longer he had to wait. He'd barely turned back to the Ben Ray compound when a horn blew, clear and strong, and then another. A chant, a low singing, arose from inside the compound. Foot soldiers rushed to their posts and came to rigid attention, their weapons presented ceremoniously before them. This was the spectacle that showed the honor of Mensa Boronson, the disciplined, precision drilling that mocked any potential enemy's claims that dark elves were too chaotic to come together in common cause or common defense. Non-drow mercenaries, particularly the Grey Dwarves, often paid handsome sums of gold and gems simply to view the spectacle of the changing of the Ben Ray House Guard. Streaks of orange, red, green, blue, and purple light rushed up the stalagmite mounds to meet similar streaks coming down from above, from the jagged teeth of the Ben Ray compound stalactites. Enchanted house emblems, worn by the Ben Ray guards, created this effect as male dark elves rode subterranean lizards that could walk equally well on floors, walls, or ceilings. The music continued. The glowing streaks formed myriad designs in brilliant formations up and down the compound, many of them taking on the image of an arachnid. This event occurred twice a day, every day, and any drow within watching distance paused and took note each and every time. The changing of the Ben Ray House Guard was a symbol in Mensa Boronson of both House Ben Ray's incredible power and the city's undying fealty to Loth, the Spider Queen. Jarlaxle, as he had been instructed by Matron Ben Ray, used the spectacle as a distraction. He crept up to the fence, dropped his wide-brimmed hat to hang at his back, and slipped on a mask of black velvet cloth, with 8 joint-wired legs protruding from its sides, over his head. With a quick glance, the mercenary started up, hand over hand, climbing the thick strands as though they were ordinary iron. No magical spells could have duplicated this effect. No spells of levitation and teleportation, or any other kind of magical travel, could have brought someone beyond the barrier. Only the rare and treasured spider mask, loaned to Jarlaxle by Grumph Ben Ray, could get someone so easily into the well-guarded compound. Drolaxle swung a leg over the top of the fence and slipped down the other side. He froze in place at the sight of an orange flash to his left. Curse his luck if he had been caught. The guard would likely pose no danger. All in the Benray compound knew the mercenary well. But if Matron Benray learned that he had been discovered, she would likely flail the skin from his bones. The flaring light died away almost immediately, and as Darlaxle's eyes adjusted to the changing hues, he saw a handsome young drow with neatly cropped hair sitting astride a large lizard perpendicular to the floor and holding a 10-foot-long mottled lance. A death lance, Darlaxle knew. It was coldly enchanted, its hungry and razor-edged tip revealing its deadly chill to the mercenary's heat-sensing eyes. "Well met, Bergignon Benray." The mercenary flashed in the intricate and silent hand-coat of the drow. Bergignon was Matron Benray's youngest son, the leader of the Benray Lizard Riders, and no enemy of, or stranger to, the mercenary leader. "And you, Darlaxle," Bergignon flashed back, prompt, as always. "As your mother demands," Darlaxle signaled back. Bergignon flashed a smile and motioned for the mercenary to be on his way, then kicked his mount and scampered up the side of the stalagmite to his ceiling patrol. Darlaxle liked the youngest Benray male. He had spent many days with Bergignon lately, learning from the young fighter, for Bergignon had once been a classmate of Driz Duarden's at melee match there, and had often sparred against the scimitar-wielding drow. Bergignon's battle moves were fluid and near-perfect, and knowledge of how Drizzt had defeated the young Benray heightened Jarlaxle's respect for the renegade. Jarlaxle almost mourned that Drizzt Duarden would soon be no more. Once past the fence, the mercenary replaced the spider mask in a pouch and walked nonchalantly through the Benray compound, keeping his telltale hat low on his back and his cloak tight about his shoulders, hiding the fact that he wore a sleeveless tunic. He couldn't hide his bald head, though, an unusual trait, and he knew that more than one of the Benray guards recognized him as he made his way casually to the house's great mound, the huge and ornate stalagmite wherein resides the Benray nobles. Those guards didn't notice, though, or pretended not to, as they had likely been instructed. Darlaxle nearly laughed aloud. So many troubles could have been avoided just by his going through a more conspicuous gate of the compound. Everyone, Triel included, knew full well that he would be there. It was all a game of pretense and intrigue, with Matron Benray as the controlling player. "Zeres!" the mercenary cried, the drow word for strength and the password for the mound. He pushed on the stone door, which retracted immediately into the top of its jamb. Darlaxle tipped his hat to the unseen guards, probably huge Minotaur slaves, Matron Benray's favorites, as he passed along the narrow entry corridor between several slits, no doubt lined with ready death lances. The inside of the mound was lighted, forcing Darlaxle to pause and allow his eyes to shift back to the visible light spectrum. Dozens of female dark elves moved about, their silver and black Benray uniforms tightly fitting their firm and alluring bodies. All eyes turned toward the newcomer. The leader of Bregendiarth was considered a fine catch in Menzoberranzan, and the lewd way the female scrutinized him, hardly looking at his face at all, made Darlaxle bite back a laugh. Some male dark elves resented such leers, but to Darlaxle thinking, these females' obvious hunger afforded him even more power. The mercenary moved to a large black pillar in the heart of the central circular chamber. He felt along the smooth marble and located the pressure plate that opened a section of the curving wall. Darlaxle found Dantrag Benray, the house weapons master, leaning casually against the wall inside. Darlaxle quickly discerned that the fighter had been waiting for him. Like his younger brother, Dantrag was handsome, tall, closer to 6 feet than to 5, and lean, his muscles finely tuned. His eyes were unusually amber, though they shifted toward red when he grew excited. He wore his white hair pulled back tightly in a ponytail. As weapons master of House Benray, Dantrag was better outfitted for battle than any other drow in the city. Dantrag's shimmering black coat of mesh mail glistened as he turned, conforming to the angles of his body so perfectly that it seemed a second skin. He wore two swords on his jeweled belt. Curiously, only one of those was of drow make, as fine a sword as Darlaxle had ever seen. The other, reportedly taken from a surface dweller, was said to possess a hunger of its own, and could shave the edges off hard stone without dulling in the least. The cocky fighter lifted one arm to salute the mercenary. As he did so, he prominently displayed one of his magical bracers, tight straps of black material lined with gleaming mithril rings. Dantrag had never told what purpose those braces served. Some thought that they offered magical protection. Jarlaxle had seen Dantrag in battle and didn't disagree, for such defensive braces were not uncommon. What amazed the mercenary even more was the fact that, in combat, Dantrag struck at his opponent first more often than not. Jarlaxle couldn't be sure of his suspicions, but even without the bracers and any other magic, Dantrag Benray was one of the finest fighters in Mensa Boronson. His principal rival had been Zach Nefane Duarden, father and mentor of Drizzt. But Zach Nefane was dead now, sacrificed for blasphemous acts against the Spider Queen. That left only Utha Gentel, the huge and strong weapons master of House Barrison Delarmgo, the city's second house, as a suitable rival for dangerous Dantrag. Knowing both fighters' pride, Jarlaxle suspected that one day the two would secretly meet in a battle to the death, just to see who was the better. The thought of such a spectacle intrigued Jarlaxle, though he never understood such destructive pride. Many who had seen the mercenary leader in battle would argue that he was a match for either of the two, but Jarlaxle would never play into such intrigue. To Jarlaxle it seemed that pride was a silly thing to fight for, especially when such fine weapons and skill could be used to bring more substantive treasures. Like those bracers, perhaps, Jarlaxle mused. Or would those fabulous bracers aid Dantrag in looting Utha Gentel's corpse? With magic, anything was possible. Jarlaxle smiled as he continued to study Dantrag. The mercenary loved exotic magic, and nowhere in all of the Underdark was there a finer collection of magical items than in House Benray. Like this cylinder he had entered, it seemed unremarkable, a plain circular chamber with a hole in the ceiling to Jarlaxle's left and a hole in the floor to his right. He nodded to Dantrag, who waved his hand out to the left, and Jarlaxle walked under the hole. A tingling magic grabbed him and gradually lifted him into the air, levitating him to the Great Mound's second level. Inside the cylinder, this area appeared identical to the first, and Jarlaxle moved directly across the way to the ceiling hole that would lead him to the third level. Dantrag was up into the second level as Jarlaxle silently floated up to the third, and the weapons master came up quickly, catching Jarlaxle's arm as he reached for the opening mechanism to this level's door. Dantrag nodded to the next ceiling hole, which led to the fourth level and Matron Benray's private throne room. The fourth level? Jarlaxle pondered, as he followed Dantrag into place and slowly began to levitate once more. Matron Benray's private throne room? Normally, the first Matron Mother held audience in the mound's third level. Matron Benray already has a guest, Dantrag explained in the hand code as Jarlaxle's head came above the floor. Jarlaxle nodded and stepped away from the hole, allowing Dantrag to lead the way. Dantrag did not reach for the door, however, but rather reached into a pouch and produced some silvery glowing dust. With a wink to the mercenary, he flung the dust against the back wall. It sparkled and moved of its own accord, formed a silvery spiderweb, which then spiraled outward, much like the Benray gates, leaving a clear opening. "After you," Dantrag's hands politely suggested. Jarlaxle studied the devious fighter, trying to discern if treachery was afoot. Might he climb through the obvious extra-dimensional gate, only to find himself stranded on some hellish plane of existence? Dantrag was a cool opponent. His beautiful, chiseled features, cheekbones set high and resolute, revealing nothing to Jarlaxle's usually effective probing gaze. Jarlaxle did go through the opening, though, finally deciding that Dantrag was too proud to trick him into oblivion. If Dantrag had wanted Jarlaxle out of the way, he would have used his weapons, not wizard's mischief. The Benray son stepped right behind Jarlaxle into a small, extra-dimensional pocket, sharing space with Machin Benray's throne room. Dantrag led Jarlaxle along a thin silver thread to the far side of the small chamber, to an opening that looked out into the room. There, on a large sapphire throne, sat the withered Machin Benray, her face crisscrossed by thousands of spidery lines. Jarlaxle spent a long moment eyeing the throne before considering the matron mother, and he unconsciously licked his thin lips. Dantrag chuckled at his side, for the wary Benray could understand the mercenary's desire. At the end of each of the throne's arms were set a huge diamond of no fewer than 30 carats. The throne itself was carved of the purest black sapphire, a shining well that offered an invitation into its depths. Writhing forms moved about inside that pool of blackness. Rumor said that the tormented souls of all those who had been unfaithful to Loth, and had, in turn, been transformed into hideous striders, resided in an inky black dimension within the confines of Machin Benray's fabulous throne. That sobering thought brought the mercenary from his casing. He might consider the act, but he would never be so foolish as to try to take one of those diamonds. He looked to Machin Benray then, her two unremarkable scribes huddled behind her, busily taking notes. The first matron mother was flanked on her left side by Bladen Kirst, the oldest daughter in the house proper, the third oldest of the siblings behind Triel and Grumph. Jarlaxle liked Bladen Kirst even less than he liked Triel, for she was sadistic in the extreme. On several occasions, the mercenary had thought he might have to kill her in self-defense. That would have been a difficult situation, though Jarlaxle suspected that Machin Benray, privately, would be glad to have the wicked Bladen Kirst dead. Even the powerful Matron Mother couldn't fully control that one. On Machin Benray's right stood another of Jarlaxle's least favorite beings, the Illithid, Mathil El Widenvelp, the octopus-headed advisor to Machin Benray. He wore, as always, his unremarkable, rich crimson robe, its sleeves long so that the creature could keep its scrawny three-clawed hands tucked from sight. Jarlaxle wished that the ugly creature would wear a mask and hood as well, its bulbous purplish head sporting four tentacles where its mouth should have been, and milky white pupilless eyes was among the most repulsive things Jarlaxle had ever seen. Normally, if gains could be made, the mercenary would have looked past the being's appearance. But Jarlaxle preferred to have little contact with the ugly, mysterious, and ultimately deadly Illithids. Most drow held similar feelings towards Illithids, and it momentarily struck Jarlaxle as odd that Machin Benray would have El Widenvelp so obviously positioned. When he scrutinized the female drow facing Machin Benray, though, the mercenary understood. She was scrawny and small, shorter than even Triel, and appearing much weaker. Her black robes were unremarkable, and she wore no other visible equipment, certainly not the attire befitting a matron mother. But this drow, Kiorl Odran, was indeed a matron mother, leader of Oblodra, the third house of Mensa Baranzin. Kiorl? Jarlaxle's fingers motioned to Dantrag, the mercenary's facial expression incredulous. Kiorl was among the most despised of Mensa Baranzin's rulers. Personally, Matron Benray hated Kiorl, and had many times openly expressed her belief that Mensa Baranzin would be better off without the troublesome Odran. The only thing that had stopped House Benray from obliterating Oblodra was the fact that the females of the third house possessed mysterious powers of the mind. If anyone could understand the motivations and private thoughts of mysterious and dangerous Kiorl, it would be the Illithid, El Widenvelp.
300?
Kiorl was saying. Machin Benray slumped back in her chair, a sour expression on her face.
"A pittance," she replied. "Half of my slave force,"
Kiorl responded, flashing her customary grin, a well-known signal that the not-so-shy Kiorl was lying. Machin Benray cackled, then stopped abruptly. She came forward in her seat, her slender hands resting atop the fabulous diamonds, and her scowl unrelenting. Her ruby-red eyes narrowed to slits. She uttered something under her breath and removed one of her hands from atop the diamond. The magnificent gem flared to inner life and loosed a concentrated beam of purple light, striking Kiorl's attendant, an unremarkable male, and engulfing him in a series of cascading, crackling arcs of purple, glowing energy. He cried out, threw his hands up in the air, and fought back against the consuming waves. Matron Benray lifted her other hand, and a second beam joined the first. Now the male drow seemed like no more than a purple silhouette. Jarlaxle watched closely as Kiorl closed her eyes and furrowed her brow. Her eyes came back almost immediately, and she stared with disbelief at El Widenvelp. The mercenary was worldly enough to realize that, in that split second, a battle of wills had just occurred, and he was not surprised that the mind flare had apparently won out. The unfortunate Oblodron male was no more than a shadow by then, and a moment later, he wasn't even that. He was simply no more. Kioral Odran scowled fiercely, seemed on the verge of an explosion, but Matron Benray, as deadly as any drow alive, did not back down. Unexpectedly, Kioral grinned widely again and announced lightheartedly,
"He was just a male."
"Kioral,"
Benray snarled,
"this duty is sanctified by Loth, and you shall cooperate."
"Threats?" spoke Kioral.
Matron Benray rose from her throne and walked right in front of the unflinching Kioral. She raised her left hand to the Oblodron female's cheek, and calm Kioral couldn't help but wince. On that hand, Matron Benray wore a huge golden ring, its four uncompleted bands shifting as though they were eight legs of a living spider. Its huge blue-black sapphire shimmered. That ring, Kioral knew, contained a living Velsharis orb, a queen spider, a far more deadly cousin of the surface world's Black Widow.
"You must understand the importance," Matron Benray cooed.
To Jarlaxle's amazement, and he noted that Dantrag's hand immediately went to his sword hilt, as though the weapons master would leap out of the extra-dimensional spying pocket and slay the impudent Oblodron, Kioral slapped Matron Benray's hand away.
"Barrison Delamgo has agreed," Matron Benray said calmly,
shifting her hand upright to keep her dangerous daughter and illithid advisor from taking any action. Kioral grinned, an obvious bluff, for the matron mother of the third house could not be thrilled to hear that the first two houses had allied on an issue that she wanted to avoid.
"As has Faint Labber,"
Matron Benray added slyly, referring to the city's fourth house and Oblodra's most hated rival. Benray's words were an obvious threat, for with both House Benray and House Barrison Delarmgo on its side, Faint Labber would move quickly to crush Oblodra and assume the city's third rank. Matron Benray slid back into her sapphire throne, never taking her gaze from Kioral.
"I do not have many house drow,"
Kioral said, and it was the first time Jarlaxle had ever heard the upstart Oblodron sound humbled.
"No, but you have kobold fodder,"
Matron Benray snapped.
"And do not dare to admit to 600. The tunnels of the Claw Rift beneath House Oblodra are vast."
"I will give you 3,000,
Kioral answered, apparently thinking the better of some hard bargaining.
10 times that,"
Benray growled. Kioral said nothing, merely cocked her head back and looked down her slender ebon-skinned nose at the first matron mother.
"I'll settle for nothing less than 20,000,
Matron Benray said then, carrying both sides of the bargaining.
"The defenses of the dwarven stronghold will be cunning, and we'll need ample fodder to sort our way through."
"The cost is great," Kioral said.
20,000 kobolds do not equal the cost of one drow life,"
Benray reminded her, then added just for effect,
"in Loth size."
Kioral started to respond sharply, but Matron Benray stopped her at once.
"Spare me your threats,"
Benray screamed, her thin neck seeming even scrawnier with her jaws so tightened and jutting forward.
"In Loth's eyes, this event goes beyond the fighting of drow houses, and I promise you, Kioral, that the disobedience of House Oblodra will aid the ascension of Faint Labber."
Jarlaxle's eyes widened with surprise as he looked at Dantrag, who had no explanation. Never before had the mercenary heard or heard of such a blatant threat. One house against another. No grin, no witty response came from Kioral this time. Studying the female, silent and obviously fighting to keep her features calm, Jarlaxle could see the seeds of anarchy. Kioral and House Oblodra would not soon forget Matron Benray's threat, and given Matron Benray's arrogance, other houses would undoubtedly foster similar resentments. The mercenary nodded as he thought of his own meeting with fearful Triel, who would likely inherit this dangerous situation.
20,000,
Kiro quietly agreed.
If that many of the troublesome little rats can be herded.
The matron mother of House Oblodra was then dismissed. As she entered the marble cylinder, Dantreg dropped out of the end of the spider filament and climbed from the extra-dimensional pocket into the throne room. Jarlaxle went behind, stepping lightly to stand before the throne. He swept into a low bow, the diatrima feather sticking from the brim of his great hat brushing the floor.
"A most magnificent performance," he greeted Matron Benray. "It was my pleasure that I was allowed to witness—"
"Shut up!"
Matron Benray, leaning back in her throne and full of venom, said to him. Still grinning, the mercenary came to quiet attention.
"Kioro is a dangerous nuisance," Matron Benray said. "I will ask little from her house drow, though their strange mind powers could prove useful in breaking the will of resilient dwarves. All that we need from them is kobold fodder, and since the vermin breed like muckrats, their sacrifice will not be great."
"What about after the victory?" Jarlaxle dared to ask.
"That is for Kioro to decide,"
Matron Benray replied immediately. She motioned then for the others, even her scribes, to leave the room, and all knew that she meant to appoint Jarlaxle's band to a scouting mission, at the very least, on House Oblodra. They all went without complaint, except for wicked Bladenkirst, who paused to flash the mercenary a dangerous glare. Bladenkirst hated Jarlaxle as she hated all drow males, considering them nothing more than practice dummies on which she could hone her torturing techniques. The mercenary shifted his eye patch to the other eye and gave her a lewd wink in response. Bladenkirst immediately looked to her mother, as if asking permission to beat the impertinent male senseless. But Machen Benray continued to wave her away.
"You want Brag and Diarth to keep close watch on House Oblodra?" Jarlaxle reasoned, as soon as he was alone with Benray. "Not an easy task."
"No,"
Matron Benray interrupted.
"Even Brag and Diarth could not readily spy on that mysterious house."
The mercenary was glad that Matron Benray, not he, had been the one to point that out. He considered the unexpected conclusion, then grinned widely, and even dipped into a bow of salute as he came to understand. Matron Benray wanted the others, particularly El Vindvelp, merely to think that she would set Brag and Diarth to spy on House Oblodra. That way she could keep Kioro somewhat off guard, looking for ghosts that did not exist.
"I care not for Kioro beyond my needs of her slaves,"
Matron Benray went on.
"If she does not do as she is instructed in this matter, then House Oblodra will be dropped into the Clawrift and forgotten."
The matter-of-fact tones, showing supreme confidence, impressed the mercenary.
"With the first and second houses aligned, what choice does Kioro have?" he asked.
Matron Benray pondered that point, as though Jarlaxle had reminded her of something. She shook the notion away and quickly went on.
"We do not have time to discuss your meeting with Triel,"
she said, and Jarlaxle was more than a little curious, for he had thought that was the primary reason for his visit to House Benray.
"I want you to begin planning our procession towards the dwarvish home. I will need maps of the intended routes, as well as detailed descriptions of the possible final approaches to Mithril Hall, so that Dantreg and his generals might best plan the attack."
Jarlaxle nodded. He certainly wasn't about to argue with the foul-tempered matron mother.
"We could send spies deeper into the dwarven complex," he began, but again the impatient Benray cut him short.
"We need none,"
she said simply. Jarlaxle eyed her curiously.
"Our last expedition did not actually get into Mithril Hall," he reminded.
Matron Benray's lips curled up in a perfectly evil smile, an infectious grin that made Jarlaxle eager to learn what revelation might be coming. Slowly, The matron mother reached inside the front of her fabulous robes, producing a chain on which hung a ring, bone white and fashioned, so it appeared, out of a large tooth.
"Do you know of this?"
she asked, holding the item up in plain view.
"It is said to be the tooth of a dwarf king, and that his trapped and tormented soul is contained within the ring," the mercenary replied.
"A dwarf king," Matron Benray echoed. "And there are not so many dwarvish kingdoms, you see."
Jarlaxle's brow furled, then his face brightened. "Mithril Hall?" he asked. Matron Benray nodded.
"Fate has played me a marvelous coincidence," she explained. "Within this ring is the soul of Gundalog Battlehammer, first king of Mithril Hall, patron of Clan Battlehammer."
Jarlaxle's mind whirled with the possibilities. No wonder, then, that Loth had instructed Verna to go after her renegade brother. Drizzt was just a tie to the surface, a pawn in a larger game of conquest.
"Gundalog talks to me,"
Matron Benray explained, her voice as content as a cat's purr.
"He remembers the ways of Mithril Hall."
Sos-Umtu Benray entered then, ignoring Jarlaxle and walking right by him to stand before her mother. The matron mother did not rebuke her, as the mercenary would have expected for this unannounced intrusion, but rather turned a curious gaze her way and allowed her to explain.
"Matron Mesberis Armgo grows impatient," Sos-Umtu said.
In the chapel, Jarlaxle realized, for Sos-Umtu was caretaker of the wondrous Benray Chapel and rarely left the place. The mercenary paused for just a moment to consider the revelation. Mesberis was the matron mother of House Barrison Delarmgo, the city's second-ranking house. But why would she be at the Benray compound if, as Matron Benray had declared, Barrison Delarmgo had already agreed to the expedition? Why, indeed?
"Perhaps you should have seen to Matron Mesberis first," the mercenary said slyly to Matron Benray.
The withered old matron accepted his remark in good cheer. It showed her that her favorite spy was thinking clearly.
"Kioral was the more difficult," Benray replied. "To keep that one waiting would have put her in a fouler mood than usual. Mesberis is calmer by far, more understanding of the gains. She will agree to the war with the dwarves."
Matron Benray walked by the mercenary to the marble cylinder. Sos-Umtu was already inside waiting.
"Besides," the first matron mother added with a wicked grin, "now that House Oblodra has come into the alliance, what choice does Mesberis have?"
She was too beautiful, this old one, Jarlaxle agreed. Too beautiful. He cast one final plaintive look at the marvelous diamonds on the arms of Benray's throne, then sighed deeply and followed the two females out of House Benray's great stronghold.